Hey everyone, this is 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna on the Believe Podcast Network, the number one podcast network for professionals. This episode, I'm joined by NHL veteran John Casey. If you enjoy, please subscribe and rate iTunes, Spotify, all the streaming channels. You can find me, Mike McKenna, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at MikeMcKenna56. Sat down with John over coffee. Really cool to hear about his career, his time with the North Stars, the Blues, at North Dakota. Enjoy.
Well, I'm joined today by John Casey of a 10-year NHL career, much more than that as a hockey player in general. We're in St. Louis. How did you end up retiring and deciding that this was going to be your community once you finished playing?
Well, thanks for having me, Mike. I am from the Midwest. I'm from Minnesota originally. My wife is from North Dakota. And we ended up here. This is the end of our career, and we really liked it here in St. Louis. The people are so nice. The fans are great. And just Midwest people, I think, are some of the best in the country.
You grew up in Minnesota, and let's dive deeper into that a bit. Hockey country. How did you decide that goaltending was your calling?
At the time, there weren't a lot of divisions of like mites and mini mites, and we had ponies, peewees, bantams in high school.
So it was called ponies back then?
Yeah.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah, ponies, peewees, bantams in high school were the only levels. And there were, like you said, it was a hockey area where I grew up. So there were a lot of people back then that wanted to play hockey, and I was young, and I wasn't getting enough opportunity to play is the way I figured it. So there was an opportunity, the goalie didn't show up for a couple of days, and I figured, well, at least I'll get to play that way. So, and I was like 5 or 6 at that time. And so I started playing goalie, and it just seemed to work out from there.
So really from the young age, you were in the net right away. You didn't have any experience.
Probably 6 years old.
So maybe just a year or two of playing out before you transitioned to it.
Yes. But where I was from, there wasn't a whole lot. Northern Minnesota is where I'm from, and there's not a lot to do in the wintertime. So we would be at the rink right after school, and we would be there till 9, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock every night. So our practice time was right after school, so say 3 to 4. And then we would be there after that until 10 p.m. And we had outdoor rinks. That's where we played most of the time. And we had an indoor rink also, but most of the ice that we had was in the outdoor facility. And we had a warming shack, so you'd go out there for maybe half an hour, hour, and it'd be cold. You know, sometimes it'd be 30 below, you know. So you couldn't be out there very long.
Right.
So you had to come back in and warm back up. And, we got frostbite and everything.
I was going to ask how your toes handled
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the toes and fingers. And,
yeah. So the warming shack had a fire that you could warm up next to? And
at first, I think it was a wood stove that we had. Then they changed it to like oil or gas or something like that. But it gave about the same amount of heat no matter what.
The NFL season is in full swing. You might not be at the game this year, but you can still be in on the action at Bet Online. Tell you what, those AFC West teams are hot right now. It's hard to go against any of them. But if you want a flyer, how about the Ravens? And hey, the Jets are 0-10, but they got to get a win in sometime, right? Take your pick. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. There's always the online casino as well. It never closes. So head to betonline.ag today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Again, that's betonline.ag and sign up today.
So as you got older and started to progress along, was it a dream of yours to play college hockey before anything else?
I think originally, you know, where we grew up, high school hockey was important. So that was the thing that you strove for originally. And then after you got to that point or near that point, then yes, then college. And then from there, you wanted to make it to professional.
So. For you to end up in North Dakota, being from Minnesota, was this a big blow to your family?
Well, I would have loved to...
Because everybody wants to be a Gopher,
yeah,
right? Is that yeah?
I would have loved to have been a Gopher, but they had two goalies that had scholarships at that time, yeah. And there weren't any availability. And my high school coach went to the University of North Dakota, and he was the assistant coach there for a season or two. So he brought me into North Dakota, and he ended up leaving North Dakota to come back, but got me there. And it's a great program that always has been and then still is. So
I wanted to ask you a little bit of this, and it might be kind of sensitive on it, though, but your feelings of how they've transitioned it from being North Dakota Fighting Sioux to being the what it is now with the Hawks. Is that a sore spot for alumni?
Yeah, sure. That's a sensitive spot. I went to two high schools. My first one was Green Ring Raiders, and the second high school was Grand Rapids Indians. And shortly after I left the Grand Rapids Indians, they changed their name. And, you know, Indians is just kind of general. So right. I wouldn't think they would have had to, but they did. And then the NCAA, as far as North Dakota, has been pushing them to change their name for many years. And finally, they won out. And it is kind of a sad, it's like taking part of your history away.
Right.
Both of those, you know, so. Yeah, it's kind of sad to me.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's obviously a sensitive subject, and I can understand the reasoning. And but UND seems so kind of unique, though, because some of the tribes that actually fought for keeping it, I guess, and then Engelstad with all the funding that he had for the arena and things.
Yeah, and he definitely wanted to keep it, you know. Right. That was part of what he thought of the tradition of North Dakota. And then the emblem that they have now, the Hawks, is not a very prestigious emblem.
And it's not as powerful either, you know.
The Fighting Sioux emblem was a beautiful emblem, you know, and I think there were three tribes, and some voted for it and some voted against it, but it's a great emblem. We originally had the Chicago Blackhawks emblem, and we let that go and couldn't get that back. And then some artist designed this new one, and it was, I think, better than the Chicago Blackhawks emblem. It was a beautiful emblem, and it should have been a good representation for the Indians, you know, the Sioux Indians, but I guess it wasn't.
That's the way it is sometimes. When you got to school, did you know that you'd get a chance to play right away? You know, sometimes you show up and a goalie will wait until senior year to get games. You know, even by your sophomore year, you were carrying a bulk of the load there, right?
Yeah, it took a little while, longer than I thought. I guess if you grew up in Minnesota, it's kind of a imperception, but you think that Minnesota hockey is everything, and it's not, but that's what you think when you're growing up. So you think, and there's a lot of publicity with it. There's the state tournament that millions of people watch.
The high school tournament,
the high
right?
school state tournament, yes. And
I played with a couple Mr. Hockeys. You know, that's a foreign term to anybody outside
and
Minnesota.
They think that, and you think at that time that you're the greatest hockey there is out there, but it's not true, but that's what you think. So then you go into North Dakota, and they have very good hockey players from Canada. A lot of them are Canadians, and you realize that the Canadians are very good hockey players, and in most cases probably superior to a lot of the Americans. So it was a challenge, and I didn't get to play right away, and I thought I had should, but there were two very good goalies there that worked very hard, and they were good goalies, so it was very hard to break in to a starting position.
Looking back, though, do you think maybe that benefited you having to work for that spot like that?
Yes, I worked harder in my college career probably than I ever had before that. And, well, probably the same after, but I learned how to work and try to achieve, and it just didn't come natural, so
right.
it was something I had to work for.
Your teammate that you had back then, I played with his son, Mark Chorney, at UND, and he told me that you were by far the best runner and skater on the team.
Is that what he said?
Any truth to that?
I don't know about running. I was a good skater.
He said you were the first on every drill.
That's
incredible to think about. Because, well, today we wear 50 pounds of gear, and even then their stuff was really heavy. So, I mean, that was important to you, obviously.
Yeah, growing up, my uncle was a coach, my dad was a coach, and we had a lot of skating drills. And I was part of all of those skating. You know, I didn't sit back in the net, or most of the skating drills, you know, the ones that they came and shot at you. I you'd go only for that. But the others, I skated for all and competed, you know.
Did you think that it was it's something that helped you as a goaltender, though, your skating ability? You know, there's.
I think, sure.
Especially because you started at such a young age.
Yeah, I think it's beneficial, yes. But, you know, when we were talking, I skated forward, too, a lot. I didn't just always play goalie. So when our team played, I played goalie. But then for the other 4 hours or 6 hours, I did not play goalie.
Yeah.
I played forward and skated around.
I did that in the summertime. I'd always take goalie off and play forward in the summer. Well, one, because I love the sport. I just love to play hockey.
Yeah.
But looking back on it, I think it really helped me develop my whole skill set and the way I see the game. It made me a hockey player and not just a goaltender, if that makes sense.
Sure. Your agility and like you said, how you see things out there.
What was your equipment like? Like, as a kid, what you wore, but then by the time you got to college, had it changed a lot by then?
Sure. It was terrible. When I was a kid, it was like half-inch foam. No plastic, no anything. So the little kids, you know, when I first started, they couldn't shoot all that well, so it didn't hurt that much. But I played with bigger kids a lot of times and ended up with a lot of bruises.
How about your headgear? What did you have for a mask as a kid?
I had a cage, but the cages now that they have in the form mask are a lot stronger. So I was hit one time in the cage and broke my nose.
Really?
So, but some had like a face plate kind of thing, you know, like the older goalies, and those were even worse.
Right.
So the cages were better, and then I had a helmet. So a cage that went like kind of like a catcher.
You had the combo, as they call it now,
Yeah, be like that. So most of my minor league or playing in my younger days had that system.
So by college, did you have a proper goalie mask, or were you still wearing the combo then?
Still the same combo.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you had a cool experience in college. I saw that you got to play World Juniors.
So
what was that experience like for you?
World Juniors was great. It was a great experience.
Where was it for your season?
In Minnesota.
Oh, perfect.
Sadly, it was in Minnesota, so we didn't get to travel anywhere special or... But it was still a great experience, and I think we did fairly well, you know. I don't think we won it or anything, but there's a lot of good competition. The Russians were there, and the Canadians were there.
Was that maybe a first taste at not just international play, but really how broad the game was and how good players were from everywhere?
Yes, I mean, definitely. You get to see the best of the Canadian teams and the best of the Russian teams and Finnish teams and Sweden and all of them. They're all very good.
Yeah. I went to St. Lawrence. So I've got a friend of mine who's in broadcasting now, Dan Rusinowski, who works with the San Jose Sharks, and he was at St. Lawrence at the time. And when I do these things, I always try to get a bit of background. And you know what's so funny about goaltending is that people always remember us for our failures rather than our successes, it seems like. And the thing that he picks up on is...
Right.
No, not even that one. But he asks, you know, do you remember losing 7-5 to St. Lawrence at the RPI tournament in 1981? You know, something so specific like that.
Wow. No, I do not.
Good. Because you try to celebrate things, right? I mean, you had a 10-year National League career, and this is what we clue in on, you know, are these couple of things. Isn't it funny how, as a goalie, though, we're always either the hero or the goat, right?
The hero, the goat, yeah. I do remember, though, Chris Chelios, remember that?
Sure, right? Yeah.
He played for the Badgers, Wisconsin Badgers.
Yep.
And one game, he shot from his red line, like the goal line, and scored on me. And we ended up losing that game 3-0. But it like bounced and took a tricky bounce. And I do remember that. That was just kind of an embarrassing time.
But back then, it wasn't on YouTube. So you could kind of you could get by with it, right?
Yeah, well, it wasn't. Replayed.
You must have had fun there with the national championships while you were at North Dakota. Some great players. I mean, I'm looking down the list of guys you played with. Maybe you could name a few, but some guys who went on to NHL careers.
Chris Chelios, we played against him, but I can't think of it right now. But
Ludwig was there as well,
Craig
right?
Ludwig and We had a lot of very good
Dave
players.
Tippett, you know.
Dave Tippett played.
He's done okay for himself these days.
Another defense.
Rick Zombo.
Rick Zombo played here.
Yeah.
Sure.
So it's, you know, you obviously had some good support around you.
Very good. And the coach, we had a very good coach. Can't come up with his name.
Gasparini.
Gasparini. But, Gino Gasparini was a very good coach. And he demanded and expected a lot from his players. And I think we developed a lot more underneath his guidance than we would have anywhere else.
You had a great college career, and then you move on to pro hockey. And you come right out and play in the National Hockey League the same year that you were in college. Did you ever expect that that was possible to happen?
Yeah, it was. I was never drafted. So they gave me a tryout, and I guess that was my opportunity. That was,
and with the Minnesota No Stars,
at that time, maybe my only opportunity that I would have had. So the general manager, Lou Nanny, at the time, gave me an opportunity to play a little bit. I think Donnie got hurt.
Beaupre.
Is why I got to play a little bit. And so I had a 6-game tryout with them, and my first game they put me in I think probably the hardest or the most fun place to play at that time was in Chicago Stadium, and it was in the old stadium, and it went straight up instead of now they back off the seats,
right?
It went straight up, so it was dangerous for the fans in there. There were more fights, and at that time we had a lot of fights on the ice, but
sure,
there were more fights in the stands in Chicago Stadium than there were on the ice.
Did you have to walk upstairs to get to the ice there too?
Yes.
Wasn't it
it was down in the basement.
Yeah.
But you could walk into that building and you could feel the electricity. So if you couldn't play in that building, you couldn't play anywhere. I mean, it was just a fun, exciting place to play. Best place to play when I played anywhere.
What were your emotions like going into this? You're a Minnesota kid. You're going to play for the Minnesota Stars.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. You know, it was like a dream come true for me. And so I got a chance. My first game was in Chicago Stadium, and the first shot went in. And then, like, the fifth shot went in. And, like, the 13th or 15th shot went in, all in the first period. They left me in there. And we ended up winning 6-3 in that game. But it was a great experience, and just being able to play for Minnesota, that was a highlight of my career also.
What did the boys in the locker room have to say to you after that one?
Well, they didn't dwell on it too much. I don't think goalies, they leave goalies alone a little bit. They don't want to mess with your line. Goalie, a lot of the game is in your mind.
Right.
So they didn't really say a whole lot to me about it.
They had to be pretty excited for you afterwards, I bet, though.
It was.
I mean, here comes a kid out of college.
It was good to win, especially after the first period.
Yeah, the way you came back and won is pretty cool, though.
Yeah, the way the team did.
Right.
Yeah, it's a team game.
Absolutely.
You can't do it. That's the thing about goaltending, like being a quarterback or any position, like you have to have the team in front of you.
Sure.
I think nowadays the game has changed a bit. Well, the defense is so good, but the goalies are better too.
Yeah, we talked a bit about it before. How we were laughing, how after a game they'd bring beer in the room, and it was just very different than it is now, right?
It's a lot more casual. Yeah, it used to be at training camp. You came into training camp to get into shape. That was the idea behind the training camp. But by the end of my career, they had testing, and you had to be like in top fit personal shape, and they had different types of bite testing, the VO2 testing. I didn't like that one.
You're talking about Keenan era here. Yeah.
Keenan with it, and that was, he did that, but also in Minnesota they did that too, yeah. But the coaches never did it, but they wanted you to do it, you know.
They'd be out back having a cigarette watching you do this, right?
Yeah, to bike and press and push as hard as you can with a tube in your mouth is not an easy
No, it's
thing.
Kind of a claustrophobic feeling, isn't it?
I felt that way.
Well, you came out, and after that little bit of tryout, though, you spent the full next season in the American Hockey League with Baltimore. Yeah. And it went pretty well. I mean, you won goalie of the year there. Did you feel like you really had that juice behind you, that things were working out well at that time?
That was an opportunity that worked out. Couldn't have worked out better for me at that time. I had an injury in training camps, which I never had really had any injuries. I pulled a hamstring. So that Baltimore was not a Minnesota organization.
Oh, so you were loaned out to another club then?
On loan, it was Pittsburgh's organization. At the time, Minnesota's organization in Toronto and some other teams defensively weren't that strong. Offensively, they were fairly good, but not so good for goalies. You know? Yeah. So their minor league teams were set up the same way. You know, they're kind of offensive minded. And Pittsburgh's organization was more defensive minded. So they had a better defensive team in Baltimore than they did in the minors of the Minnesota's organization. So to go to that organization, and they had a lot of older defensemen that were very good, that had played in the NHL, and it was probably the best thing that ever happened to me.
Was it a fun season? Just getting into pro?
It was unbelievable. Yeah, it was great.
The old American League back then's really a lot different than it is now, though. Like, it was very regional, right? Like, you were in Baltimore. Was that kind of an outlier to some of the Maritime teams that were in the league, or the New England teams?
Yeah,
a lot of travel?
We bussed a lot. Yeah. Which I loved at that time, you know. I sat up at the front of the bus and pretty country, you know. We went through Maryland and into Canada, St. John's, and New York, played there a lot. And so, yeah, it was a regional kind of thing, and spent a lot of time on the bus at different times.
You really bond with people when you spend all that time on an iron lung, right?
Cards and speaking of that, you know, it had beer on the bus too at that time.
And you didn't mind that, I guess.
Didn't mind that at all.
Do you still keep in touch with some of those guys from the early years?
No, I haven't kept in touch. You know, you play on a lot of different teams, and you don't keep in touch like you should.
Yeah, it's hard to do. I think that's something that our generation's actually lucky about, that for all the good and bad that comes with social media and those things,
it has
made it easier, right? Yeah. I have friends that from college in my early years pro that I still occasionally message with, that I don't think if I'd played 20 years ago, I would have had that luxury.
Yeah, you don't want to be like the player for the Cardinals that when the coach was cussing and swearing in the locker room was recording it.
No, that's, you don't want to out.
I probably don't want to do that.
No.
That might take it a little too far, but
yeah.
But yes, it would be better to keep in touch.
Are you a Cardinals fan now that you're in St. Louis, or you still remain loyal to the Twins?
I watch the Cardinals more than the Twins, because you don't get to see the Twins
Yeah. Did you play other sports growing up too, or were you just strictly hockey?
I played baseball for a little while and football for a little bit. I didn't play all the way through my high school.
Yeah. When you got into pro hockey, you get through that year in the American League. When did it click for you that you thought, I can do this, I can be an NHL goaltender full time? And then when did that first transition happen for you?
Well, I think you have to believe, if you're wanting to be a professional athlete, in your mind you have to believe that you can. And so I always believed I could, but believing and doing are two different things, you know. So it's a process of learning and growing and working hard towards that. Things didn't just happen that way.
Right.
Just didn't jump right in there, and never did.
Minnesota was kind of in flux. I remember talking to Don Beaupre how it was going back and forth. And so your first couple of years there is the same way. You went up and down a little bit. And when you finally crossed that bridge and made it full time, what was that feeling like to just be there finally for a full season rather than having to go up and down with the call-ups?
Yeah, Lou Nanny was the one that gave me the opportunity. He was the general manager. And so he did give me and he was planning on bringing me in. But at some point in time, he decided that I wasn't what he wanted there. So they had a change in management there in Minnesota. So they got a new general manager. And he come in and said that whoever does the best in training camp is going to be given an opportunity. And in the previous years, statistically, I was one of the best goalies there, and I was never given like a full chance. I didn't think.
Right.
That was in my mind. But this new general manager came in, and what he said was true. Like, he did give the people that did better in training camp had an opportunity, at least an opportunity, to play. And I didn't feel that I was going to, with Lou Nanny, I wasn't going to get that opportunity again.
It seems like you kind of have this history of grabbing things by the throat when you had the chance to do it. You know, is that always your mentality, is when you saw something available, like, I'm going full throttle for this and I'm going to take it?
Well, I've always been very competitive.
Yeah.
So competing against other people and wanting to get in there and do the best that I can and believe that I can do better than other people is what I thought I could do at times. But at times, you know, it's a growing experience. You know, you have to work hard to get to that place.
I mean, I grew up as a fan of you. Okay, so my age group, you know, but I saw that competitiveness in how you played. You know, you were a very aggressive goaltender, I think. I mean, you were out of your crease. You were very active. You'd get in scrums. I mean,
at times too aggressive, probably.
You think so?
Yeah, probably.
Like, looking back on it, do you think that there's areas of your game where you would have changed it, maybe, how you played?
Well, I think I tried to rein myself in at times, you know, and sometimes it gets away from you, but in the playoffs especially, you have to stay closer to home. You can't range out there so much. You have to be more concerned.
I mean, you were the master of the flying poke check. from a young age, was that something that you were just always game to do whenever? I mean, you'd be at the top of the circle sending it with it, you know?
Yeah, I think when my second high school, Grand Rapids Indians, I think I did more of that because I had more confidence that they would pick up the people on the side. Where I grew up originally, Green Ray Raiders didn't have that confidence that they would pick people up there. So I wasn't quite as aggressive. But with them, they were very good defensively. They were a very well-organized team. And I felt more confident with them protecting the other people, so I could be more aggressive towards the one with the puck.
In the late 80s, early 90s, your era, I mean, it was pretty rough to play, though, too. I mean, there's fights, there's everything.
Fighting, yeah.
Did you feel that you had that responsibility just to your teammates, that you had to be involved at certain times, too?
I don't know. I don't think I felt that way, but that was a different time. So I think most players were more aggressive, you know, so at that time. And you almost had to be. Because there were times when teams got intimidated by fighters at that time. I don't know if they talk about that much, but when I was in Baltimore, we had one of the two toughest guys in the league. So that team did not get intimidated, but I've been on other teams that played against someone like that, and they were intimidated by that. So it affected their play.
The fear factor was real to a certain extent,
yeah,
right?
It definitely was a real thing back then.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of the teams I played for, especially early on, if they had a couple of guys that you had to watch out for, it had you on your heels.
Yeah, yeah. Made them scared.
Right.
So you couldn't play, they can't play the game that they wanted to play. Kind of, I mean, it's a little different, but like the Blues against Boston, you know, the checking. They're all legal checks, but when you're being hit every time you touch a puck, then that puts a little fear. So you can't think as fast or as well because you're wanting to get rid of the puck before you get hit.
Yeah, I'm talking about the Stanley Cup Finals last year.
Yes.
The Blues just wore them down nonstop.
Yeah, and it was all legal. It wasn't fighting. It wasn't illegal things. It was all legal things, but it takes a toll, like you say.
Yeah, there's different kinds of toughness and heaviness to play with. And, you know, as the games transition now, it's less fighting, but you can still bring the physicality to it. Like, when you watch hockey now, do you watch a lot of hockey first and second? You know, where do you think the game's at now? Do you enjoy it as much as your time?
Well, I don't have cable. That's, I think, a sad point to me. Like, you can watch football and you can watch baseball, but hockey's hard to watch unless you have cable or a special hockey channel, and I don't. So I don't get to watch as much of it as I would like, but I think it's a faster game. They're a lot bigger player, bigger, strong. Goalies are bigger and stronger,
yeah.
You know, and they move well.
The average size is over 6'2" now.
I was told that they don't draft goalies unless they're 6'2" and up. No.
Pretty much true. If you're under 6', you're going to have to be the best goalie in the world under 6',
yeah,
to make the NHL.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. But
it makes sense, though.
Yeah, they're all bigger. Yeah, they can cover more net.
Yeah.
They can go down, and they're very flexible, you know, and they go down, and they cover everything on the bottom, and they move well side to side, too, you know.
Can you,
big guys.
Can you believe how much the equipment's changed things, though? Like, I think about your pads, 32, 33-inch maybe,
yeah.
You know, mostly up to your knees. There was no thought of covering the 5-hole with it, right? Was your equipment more based on mobility than coverage?
Yes, yeah, because you had to move around. But I think they have both now with the pads, you know, because they cover the 5-hole when they go down because they're so big. But they're also able to move side to side. So they have, I think, the best of both now with the equipment changes.
Looking back on it, wouldn't it be amazing to take what can be done now and toss you in a time machine back to your time and how much better you'd be than everybody else and ahead of the curve if this type of coaching and equipment was available back then, you know?
Yeah, it all changes, you know, you do the best with what you have when you have it.
You wore Vaughn, I think, almost strictly, right?
Yes.
So, and you always had a lot of color to your gear. Did you get to make the decisions on how your gear would look? Was it important to you?
Yeah, the colors, yeah, whether you had black or green or, you know, blue for the Blues. Yeah, you had a lot of input with that. And the mask, you had some input with your mask.
Well, your mask was, I think your Minnesota North Stars mask really was iconic. And they were so simple back then. You know, I always knew you were in net. You had those green stars on the top of it. Do you remember who made that mask? Or who painted it? Was it a Coverley?
Out of Toronto.
Harrison, maybe?
Yes.
See, you had a Harrison.
Yeah.
Apparently, those were hard to get.
Yeah, it took them a long time to make them. So you had to put in like a year in advance to get a mask or more.
And it was custom molded?
Custom molded, yeah. And that's a little claustrophobic. So they were made with, I think at the end at least, with Kevlar in them. So they would mold your face with it. And then build the mask from that. And then I don't know if he did the artistry himself or had someone do that for him.
Yeah. I mean, that was a gorgeous mask, though. Do you still have it?
One is in the Hall of Fame in Toronto, one of them. And one was stolen from there.
Oh, man.
I lost three masks and three jerseys here in St. Louis.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Did you get to keep jerseys when you played?
Some, not all.
Yeah,
some jerseys. They would give you some.
It depends on the team.
Yeah.
So even nowadays, it's still like that. People think that we get jerseys from everywhere we've played, and it's not always like that.
And originally, the team paid for your equipment, and they kept it.
Really?
Yes. So then I made with Vaughn, one reason I kept Vaughn is I made an agreement. Like, I think they paid some goalies some, but I just wanted my equipment. So the team did not have to pay for the Vaughn equipment. So I kept it all.
That's a good deal.
Yeah.
So how much, during your career, how much did the training change? You talked about like coming into camp in shape, but for you personally, how did the evolution of like your summer training go throughout your career?
Well, I probably could have worked harder in the summer. I did a lot of fishing and playing around. And,
but you're working on your mind.
Yeah, it relaxed some.
Yeah, we're goalies. You got to relax.
But I mean, towards the end, or, you know, I'd take a month off or so and not really do much of anything and then start back up again and bike and run and do some weights and some other. They gave you a program that you try to follow.
Okay, so by that point, they were giving you pretty strict guidelines on what to do by then.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask about the season you had with Herb Brooks, just how he was as a coach. You know, I mean, there's the mystique about him with the U.S. Olympic team and how that was with people of that age, but how was he as an NHL coach?
Well, I think it was harder for him. You know, with college, you have all the control. You know, they're trying to make it to the professionals. College players will do anything. Professional players aren't quite as easy to intimidate or to push. And so I think there were some changes in coaching that he was going through to adapt to coaching with professional players. But I think still, in all, I think he had a good program, you know, that his way he was coaching and what he was trying to implement was good. Just I don't think he was there very long. I don't think it worked out all that well.
Isn't it funny how there can be such a difference, though, between college and professional? Like, we've even seen it now. Some of the college coaches have had a bit of a difficult time adjusting to the NHL straight from there.
Yeah, it's different. Now, and the game is even different today from... And people are different. They're not willing to put up with quite as much as we did when I was there.
You were willing to put up with a lot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever coach said happened, right?
Yeah.
So the coaches would be really intimidating to you, right? I mean, if you don't do things my way, we can send you somewhere else, no problem, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. They're more vocal and more physical, and yeah.
Did you ever see anybody actually get involved with a coach on the ice?
I don't think I ever saw that.
Yeah.
No, I don't think that ever happened. I don't think a player would have challenged a coach to that point. A coach would have to go after the player. So when I played, I don't think a player would ever go after a coach.
Yeah. I mean, you've had a lot of coaches that are, you know, you had Bob Gainey on that run that you had, who was an excellent coach, I'd imagine, right?
Like, yeah, very good coach.
Was that season with the North Stars when you went to, that was the Cup final year, right, I believe?
Yeah.
One of them? Like,
Yeah.
Was that a highlight of the time in your career?
Sure it was. Yeah, he had a very good coach. So he brought more defense into the organization. Pierre Pagé was also a coach there that brought more defense into the organization. So they did a lot of good things for Dallas Stars and Minnesota North Stars.
Lots more with John Casey in a second. But first, I want to talk to you about SkinFX Wraps, designed and produced by Mark Magnanti. Based out of Rochester, New York, small company, American company, professional vinyl wrapping, specializing in goalie masks. If you want a quick, affordable way to make your mask look good, I cannot recommend Mark enough at SkinFX Wraps. He did a fantastic job for me this year when I was in a bit of a pinch. I had an old mask that just didn't look good when I would occasionally be on the ice practicing with the Vegas Golden Knights. So Mark helped me out. Made it look great. The turnaround time was outstanding. You wouldn't even hardly tell that it wasn't traditional paint. The wrap looks so good on the mask. So if you're looking for something, again, quick, affordable way to get your mask looking good, looking right for the team that you're on, hit up SkinFX Wraps on Facebook, Instagram, or send Mark an email at skinfxwraps@gmail.com. Thanks to them for helping me out, and thanks for supporting 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna.
What was it like when Modano showed up on the scene? You know, this young, dynamic kid, first overall, was it a shot in the arm to the organization?
Yeah, he was a great player. Could skate, could shoot. But that time, you know, now, speaking of equipment, he broke a lot of sticks where he probably would have scored, whereas now with the composite sticks and that, because he's a pretty strong young man when he came in. And with the sticks that we have of today, I don't think they would have broke. He would have been scoring more.
Yeah. So was he pretty tough to stop in practice, too?
He was a good hockey player.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a good hockey player.
Was there anybody in practice that made you nervous? Somebody would ring him up high off your ears way too often.
The Cordino brothers. Yeah. On purpose. Yeah.
Come on, did you have a battle going with them a bit?
They're good hockey players, Jeff and the other one. Yeah.
Jeff and Russ. Yeah.
Russ.
Yeah.
Boy, they like to shoot high. I guess they wanted to practice, but you know, when they're going by your ears, it's not very fun for a goalie.
No, that's a... I always gave the guys, the first drill was, I'd always ask, hey, just let me feel the puck, at least the first drill, guys. And then from there we can go, because like our gear is pretty good now.
Yeah.
Like really, we're, especially the kids that are 19 or 20 years old now, they'd come out and they're the hazards. They're the ones I'd be worried about because their goalies have always been invincible. you weren't invincible. I mean, your gear wasn't great, right? It hurt to get hit up high.
Yeah. A lot of times the shoulder pads and that fall down some, so you get hit in the collarbones. So that didn't feel too good, and there was nothing there. And I didn't like that it had a neck piece. I couldn't breathe very well with the neck piece that protected me.
Yeah, you never had anything on your neck, right? You were pretty open.
No.
Was there anything like that that kind of made you nervous? Skates and like thinking of Clint Malarchuk too, you know? That was the one thing that scared me.
Well, I had an incident in Baltimore in the playoffs. At the end of the playoffs, the last game that I played, we played one more game. I wasn't able to play. I had a guy jump up, and I didn't like knee pads either.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down. Guy was shooting from the point. The guy was in front of me screening me. And he jumped up in the air because the puck was coming towards both of us. And he landed on my knee with his skate. And I've got a sieve about like that on my leg where it opened me up.
Scalloped it right out that. Oh, man.
It's like that big.
Wow. Did you miss a lot of time with that?
Well, it was in the playoffs. So it was that we lost the next game, and that was the last game.
That was it. Wow.
So
what's it like to be on a team that goes on such a deep cup run like you did? To get that close to it, like even losing out on it, is there still that big sense of accomplishment?
Yeah, I think yes. Yes, there is that. But you always want to win. But right. Yeah, it's disappointing in the end. But we had a bunch of good players and they did everything they could. And sometimes you don't win. You know, that's just the game. And even if you do all that you can do, if your team does all that you can do, sometimes you don't win. That's any sport, or definitely hockey.
It had to be fun to be part of it. Like the atmosphere, you talked about Chicago Stadium. The great. Finals probably had a similar feel to it like that, right, on the big stage.
Yes, yeah, definitely. In Minnesota, we made it to the finals against Mario Lemieux and Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And there were a couple players on that team that I had played with in the minors when I played years ago.
That's right. What a dynamic.
Yeah.
It's kind of similar to Binnington when he was in the Boston organization and plays them in the finals.
Yeah.
Kind of like you who had.
Well, and Boston had a really good team, too. You know, the Blues did well by being able to beat them.
Yeah. You even touched on it yourself about the Lemieux goal. And how we talked.
There were four of them.
Okay.
Yeah, four breakaways. There were four goals.
But isn't it funny how that's kind of what we're remembered for, right? You know, it's.
But he was very good on breakaway. Kind of like Oshie. Oshie is pretty good on breakaways. Mario was very good too. And
what was it?
I was too aggressive. Trying to challenge him, and he covers a lot of area. He's a big, not as big as some of them are today, but at that time he was a big man.
Yeah.
And he could move the puck laterally a long ways and just kind of went around him.
Yeah, big reach of his.
Yeah.
Was when you would go into buildings against teams, were you looking through their roster of who they had, having your kind of your Rolodex on what they've done before pre-scouting?
Yeah, I wish we would have done a little more of that. You know, I didn't like the video, but videos of their better scorers, that would have been a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And but I tried to be aware when they were on the ice. Like there was one for the Islanders, Bossy, when I first started, and very good shot. And he would come down the wing and release it, quick release. And you had to know when he was out there, and you had to be preparing yourself earlier than most people and just getting set and in position.
Yeah.
So you wanted to know when Mario Lemieux is out, and pretty easy to see him. Or,
yeah.
But
Jágr too.
Jágr, the better players, you wanted to know when they're on the ice and where they were on the ice at all times.
Well, Jágr was really unmistakable with that big mullet he had out the back of his helmet. And when, you know, you ended up headed to Boston after Minnesota. What was that transition like? You'd spent your whole, you know, upbringing with this one organization, and now you're going to go into Boston. It's not Midwestern. It's not hometown. It's a new team. What was that like for you?
It was a huge change. to go to Boston. Like, they were talking about Tom Brady. He was getting booed the other day at his own building. And all of that organization has done for them there, for the fans. You know, how well they've done over the years, over the last 10 years. There's not a better team in the whole NFL than they have been the last 10
arguably
years.
In sports, dating back to probably the Canadians from the 60s, 70s.
To boo them. So that's kind of an example of what's out in the East Coast, you know, what happens to everyone out there. So Minnesota, sorry about that, but Minnesota was very supportive. I was from Minnesota. I was like a hometown favorite. So leaving that and going to Boston, where there were a lot of people that Andy Moog was the goalie before me that I replaced for that year, and he was a favorite. So I wasn't accepted very well when I first, especially when I first arrived.
And through no fault of your own.
Yeah,
it's just
nothing
how,
I could do. But
right.
But the media and fans, and so I had some fans, my own fans, that booed me every game.
Oh.
They're on the runway. And they booed me every single game that I went out to.
Isn't it hard to play when that's the scenario? It's not really like tough love. It just sucks. Really.
Yeah. It's I never had to deal with that before. You know, and you can understand. I loved when I went into the opposing building and they were booing me.
It would amp you up.
Yeah,
right?
I love that.
Coming out for a first star when everybody's yelling at you and waving at them.
That's great.
Yeah.
When it's your own fans, then that's something different.
Yeah. I mean, he still had a pretty good year there. He won 30 games.
Yeah, we went
second round playoffs.
A run where we had 14 games without a loss. So yeah, we had a good run or a good year there. Our right. team did, and we had we were doing well. We played in the playoffs. We beat Montreal in the first round, and they were a better team than us.
Yeah.
We beat them, and then we were playing New Jersey, and we were beating them 2-0. We went into their building because they had a better record than us. We went into their building, beat them 2 games, and our general manager yelled at us for an hour.
After you're already up in the series?
Yeah, we were up 2-0 in the series. We went back into Boston, and the general manager yelled at us for an hour.
How does the team respond to that?
We lost 4 straight.
Wow.
That's how they responded.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I've never seen a general manager come in like that in the first place. It's a coach's job.
I've seen it once. We lost 2.
Yeah.
The same thing happened. We had a GM come in and pull. It was 3 or 4 players off to the side on their own in playoffs. And guess what? We lost.
Yeah, that's not something that should happen.
Don't you want a vote of confidence?
Yeah.
Right? You want somebody in your corner.
Especially if you're winning, you know? Like, why would you do that? I don't know.
Yeah, that's surprising. I mean, and you had Brian Sutter as a coach, too. And
you were
only there for 1 year.
Right.
And then ended up in St. Louis.
Yeah, like I said, I wanted to get out of there as fast as I could.
Yeah.
I had another year on my contract that I could have stayed there, but then I became a free agent for the summer for like 2 weeks or whatever, and St. Louis gave me an opportunity to come here.
Were you excited? I mean, it's become home now, but what did you see in that team, in that organization, that made you want to come to here versus other places?
Well, I didn't have that many opportunities at that time, for one thing, but I did want to come back to the Midwest. St. Louis was a great community, I thought, and it is a great community. So.
Did you have thoughts of the old arena playing in it?
That was an interesting place. Yeah, it was fun to play, you know, the old arena, but there were mice running around in the locker room.
There were cats down there that they kept.
Yeah, for the mice, probably.
Right.
Try to keep them down.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, you were here when you moved into the new building, right?
Yeah, I think the first year.
Yeah. But you also came in with Mike Keenan as a coach. So
I liked him.
Yeah, okay.
He was, a lot of people don't, but I liked him. He was very family oriented. So he brought, we had an all-star break, you know, in the wintertime. And at that time we played like Florida, somewhere around right before the all-star break. And then you could bring your family down and stay a couple days down there with your family. And then, like, my family, sometimes I'd want to bring them to a game or, you know, like in L.A. or something. He was all for that.
That's nice.
Yeah.
There's a lot of teams that wouldn't do that back then.
No, and when I was in Minnesota, the football teams did that kind of stuff like that all the time. Hockey doesn't do, didn't do or doesn't do a lot of that. And then when Quenneville came, he's a very good coach, but he's not about family. And I had a meeting with him about my family being in L.A. But I had set that up when Keenan was a coach and he got let go.
Right.
And then Quenneville came in and basically yelled at me for having my family on the road.
Had that dynamic changed for you when you had kids? I'm guessing you had kids at that time.
Yeah, I had kids with,
How much did it change you as a person and player when your family started to become involved? I don't know when you were married and had kids, but what was that change like for you?
Yeah, I had a child in college. I had one in college, my last year of college. So I've had kids pretty well my whole life.
Yeah, so they've been part of your pro career the whole time.
And family's important, you know?
Yeah, it's the most important thing.
Yeah, so...
Why shouldn't they be able to enjoy what dad's doing?
Right.
This is the coolest thing in the world, dad's playing in the NHL.
Right, and a lot of coaches are very supportive of that. Pierre Page was very supportive. Bob Gainey at one time was very supportive of family and that. So that's I believe that's an important quality for a coach to have.
Were you at that point in your career, I don't know if okay is the right word to say, but accepting of the role that you were starting to take there? I mean, that's when you essentially became a backup. You know?
No, I never really liked it. At one time point, the first year, I think Keen was still the coach. Curtis Joseph got hurt, and they put me in. And we had a good run, and I thought I was playing well. I thought well enough to be number one.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't end up that way. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of self-defeating, or just hard to take.
Right.
Anyway, for a goalie that... Most of the time, wherever I was, I worked into at least a number one position.
Yeah, it's not an easy transition to do at all. I mean,
some guys don't mind it, but I do not like it.
Well, and especially guys that maybe do it early in their career. I talked to Jamie McLennan, and fairly early in his career, he kind of crossed that bridge to thinking, okay, I may not be good enough to be a number one, and you obviously were good enough to be a number one, but for him, he realized... Okay, I'm going to make the most out of what I have now, you know. So I think his was more kind of dictated by him knowing he didn't have that skill set, whereas you did. You know, you'd been a number one and successful. So that team had some big personalities on it, though. Brett Hull, you know what?
Yeah, some characters.
Being his teammate, what was that guy like to play with? There's so many funny stories about him. Did you enjoy playing alongside Hully?
Yeah, we got along, I think, fairly well. He can be tough on his teammates at times, or could be at that time tough on his teammates, you know, his line mates anyway, the ones that are playing with him. But definitely wants to win, you know, he's competitive, so
right.
That's a positive.
Pretty incredible shot.
Boy, could he shoot it. It seemed like it accelerated.
Huh.
So, like, most pucks get up and get on plane and go the same, and his, like, you think you have it, and then just it would just go by it.
Was he?
Yeah, these big forearms like Popeye.
Yeah,
and he could. Yeah, he could really shoot.
I mean, you played against Bossy. You played with Hull. Were those the two premier shooters that you saw?
Al McGinnis can shoot. Yeah, and he disguises where he's shooting. That's a big thing, you know. Like Al Iafredi could shoot at the same speed as Al McGinnis. But Al, you could tell where he was shooting, and mostly he kept it on low. You
know? I'm afraid he did, yeah.
Yeah, but Al would shoot high, and he would look one direction and shoot another, and he shot over 100 miles an hour, and it's hard to keep up, you know.
Sure.
For me, it was hard to keep up sometimes when I played against him.
Especially because there weren't many guys doing it. So when you saw somebody that could really shoot that hard, it was different. Like everybody now shoots the puck hard.
Yeah.
So it's kind of become your reality.
Well, the sticks are unbelievable.
Oh man, they're weapons, aren't they?
Jumps off of them.
Yeah.
And I can see, you know, they're like $300 a piece or $400, but I can see why, because right. They are that good.
There's a lot of technology involved in those.
Yeah.
You went to Peoria the next year of all places. Did that catch you completely off guard? To be headed to the minors?
A lot of times I'm asked to go to the minors.
Really?
Yeah, to play. I don't like not playing. So I think I asked to go there.
Yeah. So that season, though, you played a lot of games, and then you end up playing in playoffs for the Blues. So do you think that having gone to Peoria and played all the minutes you did helped prepare you to play in playoffs that season?
Well now they try to play goalies more equal or closer to equal. For a while there, they were having goalies play 60, 70 games a year, which is too many
right.
for one goalie to play. Like Grant Fuhrer played like 70 games. So for me to play 10 games, you're not going to be ready. You know, you can't be ready playing 10 games a year and sitting all the time. So yes, that made a big difference. I believe made a big difference being able to play consistently and being ready.
So did you find the jump between leagues to be big at all, or did you just feel like you were even more prepared because you'd been playing?
I don't think there are definitely a difference in leagues, but it's the same game. And if you're playing, and there's good quality players that are in the minors that don't get opportunities or have had opportunities that could still be there. You know, mm-hmm. So there's still plenty of talent in the minors, and still a good game.
Yeah, and Peoria back then was fun place to play with the fan base and everything, right?
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
Peoria was a great time. But it was very safe. You could walk downtown at that time. They had a boat, casino boat that went out. They had restaurants right downtown that we went after the game. And it was a great community.
Was it where was the most fun place that you played, really, in terms for your family and everything? Is there one to single out?
Probably for me, I don't know about my family, but probably Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Because I was from Minnesota. But secondly, probably St. Louis.
Yeah. Well, you ended up here. I'd hope that you liked the place.
But
so.
the only problem, you know, or difference is that I was, like you said, I was the backup goalie for most of the time.
Right. Oh, and that playoff run, it's your career here, we talked about it again, like how you're remembered for some things. Everybody asks about the Yzerman goal, right? So here's your chance to set the record straight. Tell us why that puck, was it screened through the D's feet and tough to read? Did it deflect, you know?
No, it didn't deflect. It went through the defenseman, so it was harder to pick up.
Did you see it?
You know, it was a good shot.
Did you see it off the blade, the release, with the D's feet?
I don't know if I saw it. I didn't pick it up right away anyway.
Yeah.
This
is really important for people to understand that if you don't pick it up right away as a goalie, you're in trouble, right?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, seeing the puck is everything for a goalie.
That's right.
And if you're not seeing it, at least initially, so I didn't see it until maybe halfway through or something. You know?
Right.
But it was the second overtime, and it was a 1-0 game.
And you played unbelievable, too.
And you're tired, you know, too, you know? Like, you're kind of hanging a little bit by that time. It was like probably midnight at that time.
Right.
But, yeah, so you're probably not top of your game at that time. You know, you're not. So I didn't pick it up right away. And it was a good shot.
Yeah.
You use the defenseman to screen, which is a good scorer to do.
That's what they do. That's what Austin Matthews does now. They shoot it through the D's feet, and it's for a reason. If you don't see it off the stick, it makes life tough.
Yeah, and they can shoot.
Yeah, absolutely. Those long overtime games, you made me go back in my memory bank. I talked to Ron Tugnutt on here, and Tugger said that they had like a 4 or 5 OT game in Pittsburgh, and they were bringing in pizzas and bacon and chocolate bars and anything they could get to eat
to keep them going.
Did you have any long overtime games and When you did, how did you keep your energy up for them?
I think that was the longest.
So you didn't have any marathons?
No, nothing more than that, I don't think.
Yeah. When you think back to your career, you played 425 games. But I bet you can think of a glimmer of almost all of these. But were there any real defining moments of your career where you felt proudest of what you'd accomplished?
Well, I think as a team, like I said, it's a team game. So in Minnesota, as a team, we went to the finals. I think that, and we didn't have as many skills as probably other teams that we beat. So I think we worked harder as a team. They worked harder as a team. So that meant a lot to me at the time.
Is that still a special group of guys that, you know, it, maybe if you don't keep in touch with them, but if you run into them, it's still instantly remembering those moments?
Yeah, they're great guys. They were great guys, and they worked hard. And we had a couple really good defensive players on that team that really helped a lot for us, too. They would mirror, like, the better forwards on the other teams, and until Mario, which at that game, that series, they weren't mirroring him. I don't know why the coach didn't have him on, because they should have been.
Sure, yeah.
He scored, he was a difference in the series. But on the other games and series that we played, the high-scoring forwards did not get that many opportunities because we had two really good defensive players, Gaetan Duchesne and what's the other one? I can't remember the other one. But we had two very good ones that they could skate, and they were very smart defensively, and they just were all over them.
The guys who don't always get enough credit, right?
Right. And they were great players.
Last question for you here. Minnesota, what was the feeling when Basil McRae and Mike Modano end up filming in the Mighty Ducks and the movie comes out?
I think any, you know, at that time especially, I think hockey with the new televisions and the higher definition is so much better for the fans. But back then, anything to do with to promote our game, whether it's something like that or anything, was great because our game wasn't as promoted, I think, as baseball or football or other sports. So that was unbelievable. That was great. Great for hockey and good for them.
Did you guys have it playing on loop in the locker room after it came out to give them a little bit of trouble?
Yeah, we had the bingo there for a while.
Well, this has been a fun hour. I mean, you had a really diverse career, and I love talking college hockey especially, too, because that was instrumental to you. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to John Casey for sharing a coffee and some great stories. If you enjoy 6 Degrees, please subscribe and rate in iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to all your podcasts. If you're interested in advertising, please contact Believe at BLEAV.com. As always, you can find me at MikeMcKenna56 on all the socials. I'm also available for online goalie coaching. If you're interested in that, head to 44visionhockey.com, fill out an application, and we'll set up an introductory Zoom meeting. Thanks for listening to 6 Degrees of Mike McKenna.